This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. My guest is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We appreciate you joining us on the program as always. We should point out that this week's show has been pre-recorded, so unfortunately we cannot take your questions this week. But please feel free at any time to email those to any of our four mayors. Ask@WBAA.org is the email address. You can also tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter. So I understand that you are going to be in Washington, D.C. on an annual trip. Is that right, when the show is airing?
Okay. You didn't even say good morning or afternoon,
Well,
John.
We got to get right into it. We have a lot to cover.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Yes, I will be. D.C. will be my location next week.
And what will you be doing specifically?
Well, this is our annual, and I'm sorry, I just popped my lips. This will be our annual chamber trip, where a group of local leaders as well as chamber members go to Washington, D.C. and meet with our elected officials. We also meet with certain leaders of boards and commissions that we deal with at the federal level, like the Transportation Board, specifically dealing with rail and things like that. It's always a good trip. We always have a lot of fun. It's always nice to see some of our folks let their hair down a little bit. And it's an opportunity for us to be pretty direct and ask some questions about things that are important to Greater Lafayette.
And what are some of your big priorities this time around?
Well, obviously, we're going to talk about trains. You know, we have the Amtrak service here in Lafayette. The times are getting worse and worse. We need to have a conversation with the Transportation Board to see what's going on, have a conversation with Amtrak, see if there's anything that they can do at the federal level to assist us in having a little bit more of a priority towards passenger rail. And that's always going to be kind of a struggle anyway, because at the about 40 years ago, there was a transition from passenger rail to freight, and freight now is the priority, and passengers sort of secondary. And we want to see if there's anything that we can do as a collective body here in Greater Lafayette to try and have some influence on that. Second things are just some local bills when it deals with water reclamation, things like that. The riverfront project. There's a lot of federal regulations that we're dealing with that, and we always like to get some support there. We also like to see if there's any new grants available. You know, when you have some of these bigger projects, such as the riverfront project, it's always nice to be able to get some assistance in funding. And that's such a cyclical thing. You know, every now and again, it seems like, you know, every day is Christmas when it comes to getting grant money. And then seems like there's a change in administration, and it seems like it's no longer Christmas. So that's generally what we do. We also do a lot of team building within, because there's a lot of folks, a lot of chamber members, both on the board and both just members, who we really don't get that much of an opportunity to interact with, especially, you know, us elected officials. So there's some time to sort of let our hair down a little bit and have some interactivity with those folks. And also some of our big cheeses, some of our senators and congressmen, we get a chance to meet with them. And that always serves, it proves to be interesting. A lot of the folks, they'll come in there, and some of them, when they're new, they always kind of, it's almost like they're reading off a script. They say, we're here to represent you, and they go through some of their PowerPoints that they've done really well and talk about what their agenda's item are for the future. But after they've been there for a while, they kind of let their hair down, and we really get some chances to see them in a more human way. My favorite one was always Senator Lugar. I mean, that guy, you know, he's a legend, and he's done so much good, not just for our country, but for the world. And, you know, he's one of those guys that one of these days his face is probably going to be on money, you know. And you go in there and you see this person who you've seen on C-SPAN or you've seen on the news or you've seen on local television. And you go and meet him, and he knows who you are. Obviously, he knows your name. He knows where you're from, knows a little bit about your town. And it's just really humbling to have somebody that has had such a great influence over so many years over the direction of this country to know who you are and just have a conversation with.
As you go on this trip during a congressional election year like this one, mm-hmm. are you able to do anything differently, whether it's ask for commitments from members of Congress? Because obviously you're probably going to wind up with one sitting senator facing mm-hmm. off against probably one of two sitting Congress people. Mm-hmm. Do you have any ability to ask for something from these people in terms of just maybe an election year commitment or something like that as they go forward?
Yeah. Usually, when Tony and I And the commissioner that I think this year it's Tom Murtaugh, Commissioner Murtaugh, is going, when we get them alone, just the three of us, we can have some pretty substantive conversations. And the oddity is I've been doing this thing for over a decade now, so I kind of get the political speak. I know when I'm being blown off, and I know when they're really trying to give me something of substance. And some years you kind of get the feeling that you're kind of getting the handshake and the wink and the nudge and you're not really getting much. Other years, particularly election years, you get a little more substance. You get a little more detail. They are a little bit more engaging, a little bit more involved. And the other side plays true too. And with that engagement comes a higher level of sincerity. You might have a specific request that involves something that might be one of the mantras that this particular elected official stands opposed to, and they'll let you know. The other side is true as well. If it's a program that they're passionate about or they think has some sort of relevance towards the community that they're serving, then you get the same kind of response. I've always found Joe Donnelly, he's very good at he basically, when he commits to something, he sticks by that commitment. We've had others that will give us sort of open the door for us to find either an aide or maybe some other congressional type that we can speak to. And other times, sometimes we just kind of never really get into anything substantive. We hear stories about, you know, their private life and their family and what it's like to live in Washington and that kind of stuff. But the purpose isn't always to try and have that immediate influence to get somebody to say yes to something you want. Sometimes building that relationship. So when somebody from Greater Lafayette calls or somebody from Greater Lafayette needs something done, they know they can put a face to a name, and it generally helps us move things down the road.
I'm curious if your message is going to be at all similar to the message it seems like people are getting on Capitol Hill as we tape this show at mm-hmm. the Florida State House in Tallahassee. There's mm-hmm. a lot of people who are rallying for increased laws that ban assault weapons, that mm-hmm. ban access by some people to weapons. Do you and Mayor Wisworski, both of you former law enforcement officers, mm-hmm. have any sort of stake in that discussion as you go to talk to our congressional representation?
Well, I'm a little different, obviously, on a lot of things in that position. You know, a lot of cops have had a lot of experiences throughout their careers. I've actually had an assault rifle pointed at me. And because of that experience, I'm not a big fan. And you know, not to say that, you know, I'm anti-gun, and I know this is one of those things that if you say, geez, maybe we could pause here and reevaluate, there are some folks that just think that you're immediately saying nothing, no way, no how. But government as a rule has sort of a history of doing these things. You know, government has always found that some things that during this approval process, some, you know, decades or in some cases even centuries ago, might have evolved. It might have changed. And so we do things. You know, we mandate seatbelts. We check the nicotine in cigarettes. We change the age limits for being able to purchase certain products. It's something that goes on throughout our history because we learn from experiences. We learn from lessons. And maybe this is one of those bright, shining moments in our history where we'll learn. Again, having been a cop and having to carry a gun for 23 years, I'm familiar with weapons. I'm familiar with the damage and the carnage that weapons can cause. I've had weapons pointed at me. It's not a real comfortable feeling. But like I tell some folks, when I was a police officer, it was nice to have one to point back. That works, you know, in helping a negotiation.
On the other hand, you have said on this program that, and correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. you've said that your service weapon you still have, mm-hmm. but you keep it locked away somewhere and you basically never touch it. Is that
right.
accurate?
It is locked away, yes.
So let me ask you just point blank. Do you think, as a mayor of a municipality, do you think there need to be more regulations put in place on firearms?
I do. And let me explain that, because I know that it's kind of counterintuitive for some of the constituents that I represent. There are people that can fall back on experience, and that helps form their frame of reference. And I have seen enough. I have seen the carnage that guns can cause. And these are just – some of them are revolvers, for goodness sake, and semi-automatic weapons, handguns. I can see what can happen. And as a parent and now as a grandparent – I am concerned that if we overarm our society, even if everyone that has a weapon is screened and trained and as informed as can be, there is always that potential that it would get into the wrong hands. So what do we do? I mean, do we put, you know, we put governors on cars? Do we put governors on guns? I don't know. I'm not an armorer. I don't know how that works. But I do know it's time to have that open conversation, and it's time for elected officials to stand up for what's right instead of what's historic. And I think that if we use common sense excuse me, if we use common sense and basically the same way that we have done with a lot of other issues that have created problems for us as a society, I think that we can come to a communal decision where everybody can agree. But we have to get the extremists off both sides. You know, there are those that say, absolutely not. You know, not only outlaw guns, but outlaw rocks and profanity and everything else. And then there's the other side. If it can be projected through a barrel, it's good. And the more that can be projected through that barrel, the better. We need to come to a sort of a centrist perspective on this and realize we're at the point now where there's mental health issues. There's the overarming of our society. There's so many people, children, who are vulnerable now. We need to act responsibly and see what we can do collectively to make this country safer.
Is there anything that a municipality like yours can do through taxation or anything else that would get toward those aims? People may remember that, for instance, the city of Chicago had a complete ban on guns that was struck down by a court a few years ago. And so it seems like that is not an option, at least in terms of the legalities of it. But is there anything that you can do, or is there anything that the city has considered doing?
Well, nothing right now. This is still fairly new. But we have had conversations about events. You know, that's obviously one of those, it's a big concern when we have these big public events, whether it be a football game, a basketball game, something that we do internally. We make sure that and I think we kind of sort of had this conversation a couple weeks ago. We make sure that we do everything we can to ensure the safety of our community. The second thing is that with a tragedy like what happened in Florida, there is a heightened sense of awareness. We get folks that if they see something suspicious, they call. And in West Lafayette, we're extremely engaged when it comes to that kind of connectivity between law enforcement and a potential problem.
Well, obviously, there was an incident recently, for those who do not know, that a former Purdue student who worried his roommates was found to have a significant cache of weapons and bulletproof vests and things like that in his possession.
Ammunition. Yes. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You know, a few years ago, that might not have gotten to the attention of the proper authorities. And thankfully, the professor is the one who gets the credit. He's the one that heard the conversation and alerted the police department. And the other good side of that is that the kid's getting help. The weapons have been seized. Everything has taken a natural progression. But that's unusual, to be honest. Oftentimes, and again, this is just going back to the day when I did this for a living, those aren't as planned out as people would think they are. Sometimes they're relatively impulsive. Sometimes it's almost like I can reach this, so I'm going to behave in this particular way. And really, how do you control that? I mean, I don't know.
I wanted to ask you about one particular thing that I saw. There has been some talk on social media of something that Australia did a number of years ago where they had a mass shooting. Something like a dozen people were killed. And within a relatively short period of time, there was legislation passed by elected leaders in Australia that led to a giant gun take-back event and has reduced or perhaps even eradicated the number of mass shootings in that country. Is that something that you or your police department could do? Because obviously it would have to be overseen by somebody in law enforcement to take those in and dispose of them correctly. Is that something you would consider a gun take-back type event?
I don't know. It's such a different approach here in America. I mean, it's a constitutional right. There's a lot of things that...
Well, obviously this would be a voluntary thing.
Voluntarily, sure. If somebody, we do that anyway. Oftentimes, there's somebody's parents die, and they go to clean out the house, and they find out the dad had this massive collection of weapons.
And sure, and this my fault for not phrasing this correctly, but I mean to publicize it as an event that the West Lafayette Police Department would do to say everybody come on this Saturday if you feel like it, something you would consider.
Well, I mean, you know, that actually would be good PR, but I think the understanding is that we do that anyway. And only because of very few people, particularly in West Lafayette, want to have weapons around the house that they don't know how to handle. They don't know how to make them safe. Really, they're afraid of them. And we get calls all the time to go ahead and take them up, and we go ahead and put them into the locker.
This is WBAA's Ask the Mayor. We're talking today with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. This program has been pre-recorded, so we can't take your phone calls today, but you can always email us, ask@wbaa.org is our address. You can tweet us @WBAA News on Twitter as well. On a somewhat related topic, there's been a lot of discussion about whether Indiana should pass a hate crimes law. Doesn't look like it's going to happen this legislative session. What is your opinion? Is this something the state needs?
Oh, yeah. We really whiffed on that one. Recently, we've had some events here in our city that has brought that to the forefront. And we can have opponents say all day long, you know, the laws are on the books, everything. You know, if somebody does X, they're going to get punished by Y. We don't need to create more confusion with our laws, blah, 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 blah. But and I think we kind of touched on this last time. The hardest thing to control in society isn't humanity, it's fear. And if you live in fear because of how you look, your height, you know, your belief system, whatever, that creates a stress that I personally can't relate to. But I do know that if there are things that we can do as government to ease that tension, to relieve that fear on people, then we ought to step right up to the plate and swing for the fence. Hate crime law is exactly that. You know, there are certain at-risk groups who feel vulnerable because of that status. And when we find, particularly when we had the banners out, hypothetically, even a worse hypothetical, if they just put some sort of racist remark on a banner and they don't threaten any particular person, they don't have a name, or they don't say kill XYZ, we're really limited in what we can do. I mean, arguably, you could have a case for vandalism, but if they don't have any direct threat on that, it really limits, it sort of dilutes your enforcement authority. Having a hate crime law puts some teeth into that. And when you live in a community like West Lafayette, when you have people from all around the world, when you have people who are investing in your community from all around the world, I think as a state, we would be remiss if we didn't do something to improve people's feelings of comfort in this state.
A number of these things go back to also the topic of a press conference that you had with Senator Donnelly regarding a bill that he co-wrote with Senator Young, which would offer some mental health services to police officers.
Yeah.
What sorts of things does that bill do that your officers don't already have access to or haven't been getting, do you think?
Well, to be honest with you, I think it brings a public conversation to something that's very private for a police officer. Again, I don't want to keep on harping on this past that I've had, but it's got a lot of relevance for what's going on today. Back in my day, we encountered some pretty bad stuff. And some of it was through deliberate acts of violence on other people. Some of it was through people driving inappropriately or intoxicated, or others were just something people did to themselves or their family. And it's awful. And it is something that you carry with you for the rest of your life. Now, back in our day, and actually Mayor Wazorski and I were on the street at the exact same time, and he and I both had very similar experiences. Some of these experiences we actually had together. In our day, we would relieve that stress through going out together or drinking or something like that, or sort of minimizing it to where, it was just XYZ or ABC or, oh, man, did you see that? But it scars you. And I think if left untreated or if ignored, it can create problems for you down the road.
What's your sense? Harder today or harder when you were wearing the badge along with Mayor Wazorski to be a cop?
To be honest, I think it's harder today. And let me say that parenthetically. And the only reason being is because when we were doing it, we were raised in an environment where you were sort of desensitized. Your training sort of desensitized you to some of these events. You were told what you were going to see. And you were said, if you can't handle that, there's the door. And there was an environment within the agency that you didn't shed a tear, you didn't show fear, you didn't.
There's this image of the macho cop.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And thank God that crap's gone. But nowadays, there is a higher requirement of an emotional connection between the officer and the public that he serves. You know, when Tony and I did it, Tony and I were a couple of the first cops that actually wore our uniform to do charity events. I mean, it was unheard of. You didn't show a police officer doing that kind of stuff. But nowadays, that's part of their duty. I mean, they show up and they talk to kids in school. They make them much more approachable. They do have an emotional connection with their community. So when something traumatic happens, it hurts, and it hurts deep. Now, having said that, with Joe's bill, the stigma of getting help is being removed. We did have guys. I had an experience that was pretty traumatic for me. And I was told by a commander, the chief of police said if I wanted to take a year off, I could just take a year off. And I found out later, because what I was exposed to was a communicable disease, that it was because they didn't want me around. Nobody wanted to touch anything that I touched. But other guys were told, you know, if you've had something happen, they use terms like, well, if you need to, you can go to the shrink, you know, or if you start getting nutsy, you know, we used to call guys that were having these PTSD reactions, we used to call them nutsy, or there were two guys in particular, we call them nutsy and screw loose because of the way that their behavior was modified. So there was no support for that. I mean, you didn't feel that was an option, because if you were to go and pursue that back in the early and mid 80s, you would be stigmatized.
Well, the language itself is stigmatizing.
There you go. So I think now it's a greater challenge to be a police officer, because there is so much more demand on the officers these days. But thank God they now have more resources to take advantage of. Will that stigma always be removed? Probably not. I mean, humans are humans are humans. But I think the pendulum has swung a heck of a lot into the right side.
One last law enforcement type question. I didn't intend to spend the majority of the show on law enforcement.
This is interesting.
Worked out that way. Last month, Mayor Wazworski, in his State of the City address, talked about how they had nearly doubled the number of drug arrests in Lafayette from 2016 to 2017. Mm-hmm. I wondered if you had a chance to look at your numbers as we go through having these discussions mm-hmm. about the syringe exchange program and the nation's mm-hmm. and the state's opioid epidemic. What mm-hmm. are your city's numbers doing?
I was with Chief Domkowski last night, and he gave a statistical overview to a group we were discussing. The amazing thing about West Lafayette is that we could have a 20% increase in something, and that could be one incident, because the numbers are so low that when you look at a percentile change statistically, it looks high, but really the physical reality is that it's not very low. We are having more interactions with narcotics on the streets, yes, but it's not significant. The numbers might be one or two higher than years prior, but it's nothing that would show a radical increase from what we had experienced before. But for some of the stuff that really is those front door issues, like crimes of violence and things like that, are down. So we live in a community here that has always had a reputation of being safe. We just found out last week that we're the 12th safest college community in the country. And that's out of everybody. And we're the only one in Indiana that made the list, in the top 100, I think. So it's really, you know, the chief and his team are doing a great job, but we're not immune. We're not immune. We just don't, because of the population base that we serve and basically the numbers here, we don't have the same dramatics that they have in bigger communities.
A couple of things in our last few minutes. As we're taping this, we're in the midst of one of the biggest rain events recent memory. There's been a lot of flooding.
Yeah.
I noticed as I was driving over the bridge from Lafayette into West Lafayette to come to work today that Tapawingo Park has begun to mm-hmm. flood after what's been a very low water winter for the Wabash River.
Winter.
What is your city doing to prepare? Are you forecasting there to be significant flooding in West Lafayette? How are you handling it?
You know, the funny thing is that people make the assumption that when the rain's gone, the rivers are going to start receding, but it's not. It's about a week before the flow starts really slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain levels. We've got the levees that are built in there on our side, and there are certain levels that we get concerned about. A few years back, probably 7 or 8 years ago, we actually had significant flooding to the point where it got into our sanitation system. And that means our wastewater treatment utilities right up there on the banks of the Wabash, kind of sort of near North River Road. That was the highest that we had seen it in my mayor experience since I've been doing this gig. Generally, what we do is we keep an eye on it. If we need to evacuate people, we do. We don't have portable barriers, and generally they don't work. I mean, when you talk about a body of water the size of the Wabash River, it's pretty much going to do what it wants to do regardless of what you try and do. We've got the floodplain, and it's all predicated on the 25-year flood, the 50-year flood, and the 100-year flood. We have been experiencing a 100-year flood more frequently than every 100 years. And actually, that's a misnomer. That just shows the size. That's the size that we'd anticipate that up frequently. But
well, and as recently as 10 years ago, we had a 500-year event, so-called.
Yeah. But what we do is we do the basic stuff. You know, when you have a community like West Lafayette, we've got a lot of grates on our streets that we make sure the grates are cleared so the water can get down to the Wabash. Just basic sort of housekeeping things like that. But the weird thing is that when we do our collection system, all the underground plumbing that is your sanitary and your clear water systems, there's only so much water that it can handle. You know, when you have a significant 100 or 500 year rain event, the only thing you can do is just wait for everything to go through the system. If we were to plummet for those size of events, we would have basically the New Jersey Turnpike Pike underground, and I don't think anybody wants to see that.
Well, and you did put in new water mains as you were doing the State Street Project and other things. So, I wanted to get one or two more things in. We have talked about election year events on this program, and I wanted to ask you. You have kind of gone back and forth and back and forth again a couple of times in the last couple of years about
who me
whether you might run for a fourth term in 2019. We're now only about, 14 months away from the primary. Yeah. Where are you leaning? Are you leaning towards running or not?
Yes, I am.
Leaning towards running?
I am leaning towards running. Yes, I am. We've got a lot of stuff going on. And I would really like to see these major projects, State Street and some of the support projects that are going on up and down State Street. I'd like to see them through. It's not that anybody else couldn't do it, but I just take a lot of ownership on that. And plus, you know, although I'm significantly older than you are, I'm still a young guy. And I'm having a lot of fun. I mean, it has its challenges periodically, but it's something that I love doing. And this is my home. And I really love working for the people that not only I've grown up with, but, you know, the people that I serve.
One last thing. The city of Lafayette enacted a tax on people who list their houses on rental websites like Airbnb. Mm-hmm. You and I have talked a little bit about that about a year ago when the state legislature was looking at it. In just 15 or 20 seconds, is this something that you think your city could monetize mm-hmm. further at all?
Yeah, I think we could. We've got rental inspection unit that goes around making sure the units are up to snuff and everything. And it would be very easy to inject that compliance component into it as well. But it would be something that we'd definitely be interested in looking at.
All right. Well, thanks as always for your time. We appreciate it. And we've run out of time, but look forward to doing it again next month. And we'll talk to you about what came out of your trip to D.C.
Coolio.
This has been WBAA's Ask the Mayor. Remember that you can send questions at any time for any of our mayors to our email address, ask@wbaa.org. You can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Do be sure to join us at this time next week for our conversation with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski, and find all these shows at wbaa.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.